For what nation did Xerxes not lead out of Asia against Hellas? And what water was not exhausted being drunk by his host except only the great rivers? For some supplied ships, and others were appointed to serve in the land army. To some it was appointed to furnish cavalry, and to others vessels to carry horses, while they served in the expedition themselves also. Others were ordered to furnish ships of war for the bridges, and others again ships with provisions. Xerxes passed into Europe, not as Darius did at the half-mile crossing of the Bosphorus, but at the Hellespont, that's to say, the Dardanelles. In his account of the assembling of the great army and its march from Sardis to the Hellespont, the poet in Herodotus takes possession of the historian. The great host passes in splendour by Troy, and Xerxes, who although a Persian and a barbarian, seems to have had the advantages of a classical education, turns aside, says our historian, to visit the citadel of Priam. The Hellespont was bridged at Abydos, and upon a hill was set a marble throne, from which Xerxes surveyed the whole array of his forces. And seeing all the Hellespont covered over with the ships, and all the shores and the plains of Abydos full of men, then Xerxes pronounced himself a happy man, and after that he fell to weeping. Artabanus, his uncle, therefore, perceiving him, the same who at first boldly declared his opinion advising Xerxes not to march against Hellas, this man, I say, having observed Xerxes wept, asked as follows, O king, how far different from one another are the things which thou hast done now, and a short while before now. For having pronounced thyself a happy man, thou art now shedding tears. He said, Yea, for after I had reckoned up, it came into my mind to feel pity at the thought how brief was the whole life of man, seeing that of these multitudes not one will be alive when 100 years have gone by. This may not be exact history, but it is great poetry. It's as splendid as anything in the Dynasts. The Persian fleet, coasting from headland to headland, accompanied this land multitude during its march southward, but a violent storm did the fleet great damage, and 400 ships were lost, including much corn transport. At first, the united Hellenes marched out to meet the invaders at the Vale of Tempe, near Mount Olympus, but afterwards retreated through Thessaly, and chose at last to await the advancing Persians at a place called Thermopylae, where, at that time, 2,300 years have altered these things greatly, there was a great cliff on the landward side, and the sea to the east, with a track scarcely wide enough for a chariot between. The great advantage to the Greeks of this position of Thermopylae was that it prevented the use of either cavalry or chariots, and narrowed the battle front so as to minimize their numerical inequality. And there the Persians joined battle with them one summer day in the year 480 BC. For 3 days the Greeks held this great army, and did them much damage, with small loss to themselves. And then, on the 3rd day, a detachment of Persians appeared upon the rear of the Greeks, having learned of a way over the mountains from a peasant. There were hasty discussions among the Greeks. Some were for withdrawing, some for holding out. The leader of the whole force, Leonidas, was for staying. And with him he would keep, he said, 300 Spartans. The rest of the Greek army could, meanwhile, make good its retreat to the next defensible pass. The Thespian contingent of 700, however, refused to fall back. They preferred to stay and die with the Spartans. Also a contingent of 400 Thebans remained. As Thebes afterwards joined the Persians, there's a story that these Thebans were detained by force against their will, which seems, on military as well as historical grounds, improbable. These 1,400 stayed, and were, after a conflict of heroic quality, slain to a man. 2 Spartans happened to be away, sick with ophthalmia. when they heard the news, one was too ill to move, the other made his helot guide him to the battle, and there struck blindly until he was killed. The other, Aristodemus, was taken away with the retreating troops and returned to Sparta, where he wasn't actually punished for his conduct, but was known as Thrasus, the man who retreated. It was enough to distinguish him from all other Spartans, and he got himself killed in the Battle of Plataea a year later, performing prodigies of reckless courage. For a whole day this little band had held the pass, assailed in front and rear by the whole force of the Persians. They'd covered the retreat of the main Greek army, they'd inflicted great losses on the invaders, and they'd raised the prestige of the Greek warrior over that of the Mede, higher even than the victory of Marathon had done. The Persian cavalry and transport filtered slowly through the narrow passage of Thermopylae and marched on towards Athens, while a series of naval encounters went on at sea. The Hellenic fleet retreated before the advance of the Persian shipping, which suffered seriously through its comparative ignorance of the intricate coasts and of the tricks of the local weather. Weight of numbers carried the Persian army forward to Athens. Now that Thermopylae was lost, there was no line of defence nearer than the Isthmus of Corinth, and this meant the abandonment of all the intervening territory, including Athens. The population had either to fly or submit to the Persians. Thebes, with all Boeotia, submitted and was pressed into the Persian army, except one town, Plataea, whose inhabitants fled to Athens. The turn of Athens came next, and great efforts were made to persuade her to make terms, but instead the whole population determined to abandon everything and take to the shipping. The women and non-combatants were carried to Salamis and various adjacent islands. Only a few people too old to move and a few dissentients remained in the town, which was occupied by the Persians, and burnt. The sacred objects, statues, and so on, which were burnt at this time, were afterwards buried in the Acropolis by the returning Athenians, and have been dug up in our own day with the marks of burning visible upon them. Xerxes sent off a mounted messenger to Susa with the news, and he invited the sons of Pisistratus, whom he'd brought back with him, to enter upon their inheritance and sacrifice after the Athenian manner upon the Acropolis. Meanwhile, the Hellenic Confederate fleet had come round to Salamis, and in the Council of War there were bitter differences of opinion. Corinth and the states behind the Isthmus wanted the fleet to fall back to that position, abandoning the cities of Megara and Aegina. Themistocles insisted with all his force on fighting in the narrows of Salamis. The majority were steadily in favour of retreat, when there suddenly arrived the news that retreat was cut off. The Persians had sailed round Salamis and held the sea on the other side. This news was brought by that Aristides the Just, of whose ostracism we've already told. His sanity and eloquence did much to help Themistocles to hearten the hesitating commanders. These two men had formerly been bitter antagonists, but with a generosity rare in those days, they forgot their differences before the common danger. At dawn, the Greek ships pulled out to battle. The fleet before them was a fleet more composite and less united than their own, but it was about three times as great. On one wing were the Phoenicians, on the other Ionian Greeks from Asia and the islands. Some of the latter fought stoutly, others remembered that they too were Greeks. The Greek ships, on the other hand, were mostly manned by free men fighting for their homes. Throughout the early hours the battle raged confusedly. Then it became evident to Xerxes, watching the combat, that his fleet was attempting flight. The flight became disaster. Xerxes had taken his seat to watch the battle. He saw his galleys rammed by the sharp prows of other galleys, his fighting men shot down, his ships boarded. Much of the sea fighting in those days was done by ramming. The big galleys bore down their opponents by superior weight of impact or sheared off their oars and so destroyed their manoeuvring power and left them helpless. Presently Xerxes saw that some of his broken ships were surrendering. In the water he could see the heads of Greeks swimming to land, but of the barbarians the greater number perished in the sea, not knowing how to swim.